And welcome back. Archaeologists have long been fascinated by the earliest settlers and settlements along the Mississippi River in our region. From the Mississippians who populated the Metro East region 1,000 years ago to early settlers in St. Louis, we are learning more about it on this 250th anniversary of the founding of St. Louis. Downtown road construction has yielded new findings about some of the most important settlers, the French. Producer Alex Hoyer has been looking into those findings and reported on their significance earlier today on Morning Edition. He joins me now in studio to explain. In a moment or two, we'll bring in Bob Moore, historian of the Gateway Arch National Park Service, also with us, and he'll be here by phone. Michael Meyer, Missouri Department of Transportation archaeologist and principal investigator of the archaeological team in St. Louis, also joins us by phone in just a moment. But we'll start with Alex. Alex, you know, it's really no surprise that the French fur traders populated this region a couple hundred years ago. So what's the significance of this finding showing that they were indeed here?
The significance is that it, in a way, confirms what we already knew. As you say, this was a major commerce center back in the late 18th century because of the fur trade. So it confirms that it was a commerce center. But what really is the new finding is how much the fur trade benefited the residents of St. Louis. One of the things that Michael Meyer, the archaeologist from MoDOT, can talk about in a moment is that where they discovered pottery really suggests even the lower class citizens, for lack of a better term, were well off because of the fur trade.
Well, let's go to Michael Meyer now. You know, one of the fascinating things about this discovery is the fact that it's really three dwellings in a sense in one. The one at the lowest level, of course, being the cabin, if we can call it that, the home of the French fur trader. Explain the other part of the finding there.
Yes. What you can see at during our archaeological excavation is that we not only had the original 18th century cottage, but on top of that, we had a later mid-19th century brick, you know, American home. And then on top of that even was a 20th century industrial building. So when we were working out there, you could basically see the construction of history of St. Louis over a period of, you know, 200 years. And what was truly amazing is that all this construction really left the original ground surface, that prehistoric early colonial ground surface, almost untouched.
Why are you so excited about this?
Well, there's two different aspects to this. One is the historical importance of this. You know, we can study the history of the French colonial settlers through documents. But this actually gives us an opportunity to physically look at where they lived, how they lived, and the things that they owned, which adds an additional perspective to studying these people. And the second aspect that fascinates me is, you know, conventional wisdom says that, you know, in urban areas like downtown St. Louis, everything is destroyed, everything is gone, everything has been removed. And yet we can come in here and demonstrate that, you know, not only is that not true, but in fact, in some areas, everything is still there. And I really want this to be sort of an eye-opening experience for people to be able to picture that, you know, the entire history of St. Louis is still there in pieces under the ground that we walk on.
But, Alex, a lot of it was destroyed years earlier as we began to make preparations more than half a century ago for the arch grounds.
Right. The earliest plans to develop a monument to Thomas Jefferson were formed in the 1930s, and then the National Park Service acquired some property, and demolition began in late 1939 of nearly 40 city blocks of what is now the National Park and where the Gateway Arch is. So, yes, there is a long history of St. Louis destroying its past. But I would expect that this is also true, maybe not to as large of an extent, but it is also true of what other cities have done as well.
Well, Bob Moore, does the National Park Service have a guilty conscience about this?
Well, I don't know. You know, it's been a question that's been asked for many years, and even in our new exhibits under the arch, we're going to pose that question once again to let visitors think about it for themselves. there's been all kinds of remarks made over the years. Certainly, historic preservation wasn't in the state that it is today in the 1930s, and people just didn't really think about the destruction of what were then 70-year-old buildings as being anything that was really all that detrimental to the city's history. They just looked at them as derelict old buildings that needed to come down. Today, we probably look at the whole district and say, oh, we've got to restore every single one of those buildings in there and try to spruce it up and make it look like it did, many, many years ago.
This latest find is really quite a boon for you, is it not? I mean, as preparations are underway to redevelop that area downtown and spruce it up, if you will, this is really quite a nice thing to have happen.
Well, it is. I think it's a nice thing overall for St. Louis because of its 250th anniversary. And then going down the scale, obviously for the National Park Service, the City Arch River Foundation that are partnering on putting in new exhibits and making the arch grounds more accessible to people, it's another great thing. I think that one of the main things that hasn't come up yet in the discussion is that we never expected to find anything of the French colonial heritage still existing downtown. Of course, across the river in the town of Cahokia or down the river in St. Genevieve, you can see original buildings that are still standing, and progress really hasn't touched them. But so much progress took place in the downtown area, and it was the heart of the commercial life of St. Louis for 100 years. And it just wasn't thought that anything was going to be left. The last French colonial house in St. Louis was taken down in 1875. And, even the main scholars of this topic over the years and the big preservationists like Charles Peterson, who founded the Historic American Building Survey, never thought that there would be any vestiges left of colonial St. Louis. So we really can't underscore too much how historic a find this is.
And, Alex, this really affirms the choice of that location for the Jefferson Expansion Memorial, doesn't it?
Right, and that's actually something that I talked with Bob while we were looking at the archaeological dig site, is that there's a reason why they put the arch where it is. And Bob, I think you'd actually be best to talk about that.
Well, it's a lot of people say, well, it's named Jefferson National Expansion Memorial, so it's to honor Thomas Jefferson. But in a way, it's to talk about St. Louis's influence on the greater West, the Trans-Mississippi West, which started long before Jefferson got involved, because St. Louis in its colonial days was one of the premier fur trading posts of the continent, and a relatively small town with only about 1,200 people was bringing in the equivalent of millions of dollars of profits every year because of its involvement in the fur trade. So it's really quite a story, and it's another thing that we're going to try to highlight in the new exhibits for Under the Arch.
I know you'll be putting other artifacts in that exhibit, but before we put the cart before the horse here, let me come back to Michael Meyer. With regard to some of the other things you did find, Michael, we talk about the shard of cup, and we've heard about that on Morning Edition today. What else did you find?
Most of the material that we find are the ceramics, French faience. We also have a couple of trade items, like lead bale seals, possibly off of bales of fur, gun flints, and a lot of food bone. I mean, probably the biggest collection of material that we have is food bone out of what look to be cooking pits or ovens. There's not a tremendous amount of artifacts from these, early levels. But then again, we are still working on the sites. We still have a lot more work to do.
One of the things that I found remarkable is that where they were at the archaeological dig site right under the Poplar Street Bridge is that they actually know who built the house and who lived in the house, because the French kept really, really good records. So where they were, and you can go to our website and you can see some fantastic photos of some of the artifacts that they found. The specific place where we were, it was built by a man, and then it was later owned by a guy with the last name of Rivier, and he was part of a prominent St. Louis family. So I just find it remarkable that they know who lived there.
I wonder, again, Michael, back to you, if the land in that area is now somehow protected. I mean, if you suspect that there is more there, and I would gather likely there could be more if you continue digging, can you, and is the area protected at all so you can do that?
It is fairly well protected. You know, we have to, during the excavation, we will have to have a certain amount of security to prevent, you know, vandalism and things like that. But our excavation, we're basically mitigating the impacts of our project. So the project will put in new highway piers for the bridge, and we'll be investigating and sort of removing the archaeology out of the way. And then when we're done, the entire area will remain paved over with asphalt. And my hope at the end of this project is to be able to come away and say, yes, we have French colonial sites. Yes, we collected all this information. And, oh, by the way, we're able to preserve a large portions of these sites so that we can say that parts of the original French village still exist for the future.
And one thing I'd like to point out is that there were concerns about looting. We actually knew of this story beforehand, but we held off on publishing anything about it because in the past, whether it's been in the newspaper or on the TV or radio, when there has been news about ongoing archaeological investigations, there have been people who have gone down to those sites and have destroyed and disrupted the work that the archaeologists are doing. And right now, as I understand it, Michael, the site where we're talking about, where you made these discoveries, it has been filled back in. So people who would go to it wouldn't really see anything except level dirt, right?
Exactly. And that was, you know, that was part of the intent on what we did. And I appreciate Alex sort of holding back on the story to allow us the time to finish up our work. You know, it's sort of a catch-22. We really would like to share as much information as soon as possible with people, with the general public. But on the other hand, we also know that sometimes, you know, individuals will take that opportunity and, for lack of a better word, vandalize our work. And we've already had one instance of that on our site, sort of a minor amount of damage, but we did not want to risk any of our early French colonial stuff to that type of vandalism.
Bob Morey, we want to point out that the property that we're talking about now does not belong to the National Park Service. Isn't that correct?
Right. It's just one block south of where the park is. So originally, the French village, of course, encompassed the arch grounds, and it went as far south as about Chodo and about as far north as where the Martin Luther King Bridge is today. So it was a long, narrow settlement, didn't go any further west than where Memorial Drive is. So a really long, narrow village that existed once and kind of huddled on the river.
One of the things that struck me about this, and perhaps you as a historian would like to comment on that, is that what were these people doing building so close to the river? I mean, we all know what the river can do and has done over the years. You'd think they'd want to pull back a little bit to a little higher ground.
Yeah, well, it was high ground at the time, though, and that's what the genius of Pierre Laclede and Auguste Chodo was, that they knew they wanted to build a trading post. They wanted to build it as close as they could to the confluence of the Missouri and Mississippi, but they built it on the first high ground that they saw as they came back down the river. And at one time, St. Louis was on top of a river bluff that was from 30 to 40 feet tall. The citizens quarried that all away to make the levee. And so that all happened in the American period in the 1830s and 40s. Prior to that, there was a river bluff there. And in fact, the only way you could get down to the river at that time was along what is today Market Street. It was the only place where there was a break in the bluff where you could get from the plateau where they built their homes down to the river itself.
So it was higher ground then than it is now.
Yes. Well, it's probably comparable to the level where the arch is today. So if you think of the arch and the grand staircase that leads up to it, it's somewhat comparable to what the bluff would have been like that the French settled on back in the 1760s.
Well, I remember that grand staircase in 1993 when the Great Flood made its way up a good portion of that staircase, as I recall.
Yeah, it came about halfway up the staircase. So we know that the colonial town was never flooded, despite big spring floods that they had during that period.
Michael Meyer, what is the significance of finding out through this latest excavation that you had someone of somewhat more means living adjacent to someone of less means, almost as if there are two different classes of people living side by side? Is that a correct assumption?
That is sort of the assumption that we're going in with, and that's one of the things that as a historical archaeologist we'd like to sort of tease apart in the history, is because we look at the documents and they suggest one thing. They suggest that, you know, on the east side of the street it was just a poor fur trapper, and on the west side of the street it was a very prominent early citizen of St. Louis who owned, you know, twice as much property. But then when we start looking at the artifacts kind of tell us a different story. And it sort of challenges our original understanding of the history of these people here. And, you know, if we could always just look at the historical documents, well, we wouldn't have to be doing the archaeology because the documents always told the truth. But, you know, we've learned over the years that, you know, documents don't always say everything. They give you hints and bits and pieces, but, you know, you need a, for lack of a better word, you need to keep on digging to find, you know, something closer to the truth. And that's what we're hoping to get out of this archaeological excavation.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are struck by how much information and how much you can deduce from finding a piece of a shard of material, is the way I refer to it, that looks to be, and according to the pictures we have on our website, maybe about an inch by 2 inches, and yet that tells you a lot.
It does tell you a lot. And unfortunately, you know, like I said before, we do not have a lot of material, so we have to get as much information out of each piece as we can. And, you know, ideally, you know, we have this piece of material and it conveys a certain amount of information. You know, for example, well, we know, you know, where it's made and how much it costs to be, you know, imported in. And you collect all these little different pieces of information that's attached to this artifact. And then that begins to, you know, build and give you more of a picture of the person that, you know, bought it and owned it and eventually discarded it.
So where was this piece made?
This piece...
gotcha, right?
you kind of caught me out here. This piece is really an unidentified piece of polychrome faience. So we know it's French manufacture, but exactly where... can't really say right now.
Well,
I need some help.
France is close enough for our purposes here today.
I mean, we have other artifacts that I have a better grasp on exactly where they were produced and everything like that. This particular one, not so much.
Other artifacts, you're not speaking of this site, are you? I mean, we know there like what have you found that you know more about?
Well, I mean, other types of ceramics. We have other... Okay. Pieces of the French faience that we know more regionally where they come from. You know, they're not unidentified. We know they came from the, you know, Normandy region of France or the Provence region of France.
Well, that's pretty good to narrow it that much. We have a caller here who wants to get into this discussion, so let's bring Chris in. He's calling from South St. Louis. I think it's a he. Chris, go ahead.
Yes, hi. Good afternoon. I wonder if – I came to the program late today, unfortunately. I wonder if Bob Moore spoke to – the virtual recreation of the colonial village that he made a great presentation on at the symposium at the History Museum back in February. I don't know if he spoke to that yet, but maybe he could describe that briefly. It's quite an exciting project from what I saw.
Go ahead, Bob.
Well, I guess I have my fans out there. I put together a three-dimensional representation of St. Louis during this time period so that it's a computer model in which you can actually kind of maneuver around and see all the various buildings and all of that. I guess what's sort of fantastic about it is that there's enough information to really do that so that you can really virtually recreate what St. Louis would have been like just from the information that exists in the written materials.
Fascinating stuff. Alex?
One of the things I'd like to point out, and one of the things that people have asked me, is why wasn't this found before? I mean, thousands of people drive over it. Sure, people don't go right under the interstate, but I don't know if it's completely accurate to say, but it seems that there has been more of an importance placed on history. And in 1966, Congress passed the National Historic Preservation Act. So that requires archaeological investigations for federal agencies and to other agencies that are using federal funds. And the Poplar Street Bridge was built before 1966. I think it opened in the early 60s. So there are bridge piers right next to the actual dig site where they were. And so I just wanted to make that clear.
If that act had been passed 50 years earlier, we would have preserved a tremendous amount, obviously.
I don't know if the arch would have actually been built if that law would have been in effect 50 years earlier.
Time is running away from us, but Michael, I want to come back to you because I know you found some bones in this site that we've been talking about, which gives you a clue, I guess, as to what people were eating back in the day. What were they eating?
That's a good question, and that's one of the things that we're interested in. We're still midway through this through the field work here, and we have just recently come back and brought our stuff back into the lab, so we haven't even opened up the artifact bags and taken a second look at this stuff. So I mean, we're kind of curious to see, you know, are we dealing with domesticated animals, or are they just living off of the wildlife here? Is this, you know, pig, or is this deer? Don't really know yet, but that's one of the avenues of research that we're looking at.
Only a few seconds left, and Bob Moore, I want to turn to you. Who else was around? We had no, the French were there. Who else was in the proximity aside from the Native Americans?
Well, across the river, of course, it all depends on what time period you're talking about, but first it was the French, then the British were there, then the Americans were there, and all during that time the French were on this side of the river.
The British on the other side.
British were on the other side, and then when the United States won its War of Independence, it was the Americans that were there.
Well, it's fascinating stuff. Alex, I know you want to point to our website. We have just 10 seconds for you to do that. More information on our site.
Right. Great photos of the pottery, exactly where it is, and of the layers of development.
Fascinating stuff. We'll look forward to hearing more as time goes on and more digs are developed. Thank you so much, gentlemen, Michael Meyer and Bob Moore, for being with us.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Alex Hoyer, thank you for being with us. Nice story today.
Thank you.
And again, go to the website for more, folks. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll talk with two physicians about gun violence as a children's health issue. Then we'll follow that with noted local Olympian Jackie Joyner-Kersee about her work with youth health and fitness. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.